So I wonder how our emotions have been over the past few days. Maybe for some of us it's felt like a shock, and maybe for some of us we're not really sure what we feel. I was at a Renew Wellbeing on Friday morning in the cafe space, and there was one comment I heard from one of the health visitors that was bringing someone along, who was just saying, "I didn't expect to feel as sad as I do." I don't know if that's true for any of you as well, that actually you feel a sense of grieving or a sense of loss that you didn't actually expect to feel for someone who most of us won't have met in person, but actually mourning the loss of the Queen. And in many ways, it's fair enough. She was around for 70 years as Queen. I'm no big royalist myself, but for me, it still hit me. I'm just coming up to 30 years old, and she's been around for all of my life, has always been there, and I remember those key events of the different jubilees as well, and just always used to seeing her on the screen and just knowing that she was a significant part of our nation. But even then, I think there might be more to it than that as well, in terms of the loss that we might be feeling at the moment. The writer and theologian Peter Rollins recalls when Princess Diana died. I don't know if many of you here remember that time. I can just about remember it and just seeing it on the TV screens, where there was a great plethora of people who came to Buckingham Palace and stacked up flowers on flowers and flowers, and they just went out for what seemed like miles. And all the grief and all the mourning was astounding over one person. But actually, Peter Rollins points to the fact that, or perhaps it might be because we live in a culture that doesn't know how to deal with grief. We haven't been trained well in how to grieve. So Peter Rollins says, what happens sometimes is that when a public figure dies, and besides our grief for that person, it can actually give people a way to express all of the grief that they've been carrying around that they haven't known how to deal with. And actually, when a public figure dies, it's suddenly you're grieving the loss of that person, but actually you're grieving so many other losses in your life as well, and it's that we're actually given a space to do that. I don't know if you've ever had someone public die, maybe an actor, a musician, a politician, perhaps not many politicians, but actors, musicians, people who you feel have had an influence on your life, and it deeply moves you, and moves you in a bigger way than you can even comprehend, and you can't quite figure out why it moves you so much. I don't know if you recall when Robin Williams died some years ago. That affected a lot of people. We didn't know him personally, but a lot of people loved his work. So a public figure dies, and you ask the question, why does it affect me so much? Why am I feeling these things about someone who I never met and didn't have a significant impact on my daily life? But actually, is it because it taps into all of this latent grief that's built up in us, that's unexpressed, and then it comes out? So, for this Sunday, as we are mourning the loss of the Queen, we might also be mourning other losses. We might also be bringing other feelings of grief that we might be experiencing. So what is grief? It's essentially just a natural response to loss. It's that emotional suffering that you feel when someone or something that you love is taken away or changes. Often the pain of loss, it can feel overwhelming, can't it? You might experience all kinds of different and unexpected emotions, from shock to anger to disbelief or guilt or just profound sadness. And the pain of grief, it can also disrupt our physical health as well, making it difficult to sleep or to eat or to do our daily tasks or to even think straight. And these are all normal reactions to loss. And the more significant the loss, the more intense our grief will be. And coping with the loss of someone or something that we love is one of life's biggest challenges. So for many of us, we might associate grieving with the death of a loved one, which is often the cause for the most intense type of grief. But actually, any loss can lead to grief, including relationship breakdowns or loss of health or losing a job or loss of financial stability or loss of a child or retirement or death of a pet. Even things like loss of a cherished dream that you were building up to and that never came into fruition. Or maybe loss of a friendship. Or maybe simply you're moving house or just changing your job and that you experience a sense of grief through that. Even subtle losses in life can trigger a sense of grief. You might grieve after moving away from home or graduating from university or changing jobs. And change is a form of loss, and that loss, it needs to be grieved. So we're often familiar with grief over bad things that we experience in our lives, but there's also grief over good things as well. You know, if we leave from one job to go to another, it might be a promotion, it might be a new experience that we've chosen to do, but there can still be grief that we experience when we move on from one thing to another. Remember what was lost. Maybe it was your colleagues, maybe it was some of the work environment, or maybe when your child grows up at the different stages, there can be loss of how it was before. And it can be good to change, it can be necessary to change. But when things aren't what they were before, we often mourn that and grieve that. Every time you gain something, you'll often lose something too. And the Queen herself is very quotable. And one of the things that she shared years ago is, "Grief is the price that you pay for love." I think that's very true, isn't it? And it's normal, it's healthy, it's a part of life just to let that out. So what are we like at grieving in the UK? Do you think we're good at grieving in this culture? I don't know if any of you have ever seen images on the news or maybe been to different countries, different cultures in person, where you will see a family and a village gather around a casket. You might see women throwing themselves on the coffin and they're wailing and they're weeping. And it might seem really, really over-expressive and over the top, where people are draping themselves on the casket as it's paraded through the village. You might feel like, wow, that's pretty primitive, that's quite old school. But yet, actually, funerals in the West, we sit completely still, don't we? People will often apologise, like, "Sorry, I just keep tearing up." At a funeral of someone that person deeply, deeply loved. And they're apologising that they feel bad about expressing their grief. I think we actually have a very repressed way that we are told how to deal with grief. We're supposed to sit there and to process it quietly and rationally. Yes, I love them, and yes, they've died, and yes, I miss them. But in other cultures, funerals can be held over a number of days, and everyone in the area attends, and they really actively ensure that the grieving family is well supported and not left alone at all during that time. And people are allowed to really express themselves and are actually openly encouraged to express their loss. On the other hand, in the UK, it can often feel as though people prefer you not to express your grief in public, that society prefers you to step back into normality as soon as possible after the funeral. There is actually no legal right to have time off for bereavement, let alone any other form of grieving as well. You simply just got to hope for an empathetic employer. In other cultures, they actually also have a 1 year after death party where they'll celebrate the person who died through sharing stories together and supporting the family. In Western culture, well, those who were close to the person who died, we might mark the anniversary of that person's death by silently remembering, perhaps shedding a tear quietly. But we often get the feeling that people outside the family, they don't really want to know. No one talks about it. So which one is really the more sophisticated and more healthy model? Letting it all out or sitting there repressing it with no outlet? Many of us will know the story of Jesus bringing Lazarus back to life. Very well-known story, often well-known because people reference it as the shortest verse in the Bible, where Jesus wept. It's one of those like Sunday school things as a kid, where if you had to try and recall a Bible verse, and it was like, oh, Jesus wept. That's the one I can remember. Well, actually, just on a bit of a side note, in the original Greek, Jesus wept. It says Jesus shed a tear, essentially. Jesus shed tears. And it's actually about six. It's 16 letters in the original Greek. And there's actually another verse in 1 Thessalonians 5:16, which is be joyful always in English. And it's only 14 Greek letters, is translated rejoice evermore. So that's a little bit of Bible trivia for you. Jesus wept is not the shortest verse in the Bible. Instead, it's 1 Thessalonians 5:16. But actually, jumping back to this story where Jesus wept. Lazarus was a close friend of Jesus, and Jesus was warned that Lazarus was really unwell. But by the time Jesus visits Lazarus, he's been dead for 4 days and is in a tomb. And then what we read next are some really profound emotional responses from Jesus. In the NRSV, it translates the end of verse 33 with saying that Jesus was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. So actually, with the Greek verbs here and the reality of what Jesus would have been expressing there, this translation is actually too weak. The first verb in that verse has a connection to anger. It's not simply a strong feeling, but actually it's more of a passion and pain that comes from anger at the situation. And then the second verb as well, the root of that is tied into the stirring up of oneself on the insides. It can be used in a physical sense of stirring up water, disturbing the calmness of a still water. And in a more personal sense, it kind of demonstrates both mental and internal disturbance that's kind of similar to almost being physically sickened and disturbed. So then we do have the second shortest verse in the Bible, where Jesus weeps. And Jesus has the same reaction that the mourners do. He weeps real tears. Jesus was angry and groaning deeply in his spirit and was stirred up in his mind, heart, and body by Lazarus's death. Jesus cried aloud. Jesus was expressing his grief. But commentators have often struggled with this passage, with that verse specifically. They ask questions of, is this an indication of human grief felt by Jesus? Or is he upset because of the crowd's grief and how that's hypocritical? Is he angry at people's continued inability to believe? Is he upset because his own death and tomb are approaching? Commentators really struggle with it and are kind of just really intrigued by this emotional Jesus. And all of these suggestions, they do have some plausibility. But actually, John, in the book of John, he doesn't seem interested in clarifying the reasons for Jesus' emotions here. Whatever the precise trigger, it's worth noticing that Jesus remains unmoved. Jesus doesn't remain unmoved in the presence of this death and grief. It's not just overcome by this robotic-like lack of emotion. That's not how Jesus expresses his grief. So I wonder if commentators actually struggle with this because we're simply not good at grieving. We just try to suppress it. We perhaps even see grieving as a sign of weakness at times as well. So why would Jesus, the Son of God, express something so weak? Well, perhaps Jesus is showing us how to grieve. Or simply, Jesus is expressing his own grief in a more human way that humans, even ourselves, can express. Even the incarnate God is broken in his heart and soul by the death of his friend Lazarus. Death and loss grieves God. And loss breaks our hearts and stirs up our souls. And to grieve well is to allow those feelings to come out and to release them. So it's good to feel your feelings and it is good to express your grief. In fact, it's essential. Society often has a different perspective on grief. We have that phrase of man up. I used to secretly pride myself in how long it had been since I'd last cried. And it had been about 10, 15 years since I'd last cried. But we've been on our own grieving journey over the past year. And actually, it has been really freeing to be able to express that grief in different ways and to feel able to do that. Society says, replace your loss as soon as you can and just get on with your life. Your dog's died, get a new dog. You've lost your partner or your partner's left you, get a new partner. If you don't like your job or you've just lost your job, just get a new job and then it will all be fine. Well, you can replace your loss, and not that any of those things are bad in of themselves. Of course, they're very natural, but to be jumping to those things, to be pushing for those things and suppressing those feelings of grief, they're not going to help us in the long run. What we actually need to do is to review our loss, to actually go through the pain of looking at our loss. One pastor shared of how he spent 3 hours with a great Christian counsellor one day. And the counsellor said, when people have great grief in their life, I always tell them to slow down their life's pace. Many of us, we try to stay busy. But actually, he said, slow down and think thoroughly. Talk often and write introspectively. Work through it and process your grief. The world says to grieve alone, or Western society in particular, for us to handle grief by ourselves. But God says to grieve in community. On the night in the run-up to Jesus being betrayed, he was grieving deeply as he brought his disciples to the garden. And he took Peter, James, and John and said, come and pray with me. I need your help. I'm hurting tonight. He grieved in community. The disciples must have learned that lesson because when Jesus found them after his resurrection, all but Thomas were gathered in one place. They were grieving in community. The world had been crushed. They were frightened and they were grieving at the same time. This is an image of when toxic waste has been buried in the ground, because we as society seem to think you could bury toxic waste and get away with it. Actually, we found out you can't. It seeps into the soil. It poisons plants. It kills animals. It seeps into the water. It pollutes the water and fish as well. You can't bury toxic waste. It keeps on causing problems. And you can't bury grief either. You have to let it out. You can't just say, I'm just going to carry this myself for the rest of my life. The reconciliation needs to take place, and that's not going to take place overnight. There's not even necessarily going to be a clear end in sight. When we grieve well, we embark on a journey, one that has twists and turns and ups and downs. But when embraced well, there can actually be times of richness, of depth, of meaning, of joy, fulfillment, peace, all alongside the sorrow and the hurt and the anger. It is all part of the journey. But we actually have to choose to own it and to live with it and to move through it. Journeying through these things with God right alongside us. A God who weeps when we weep and is joyful when we're joyful. A God who expresses what it means to be human and to grieve well. A God who holds on to us no matter what. A God who won't just simply substitute our losses, but a God who can help us see hope in times where we've lost hope. A God who is present with us. A God who calls us to be in community with others, supporting others in their grief and allowing ourselves to be supported by others too. I'm just going to invite the band up as we bring this to a close. So we are in this period now of 10 days of mourning before the Queen's funeral. So please take this opportunity in this period of time to consider some of the things that you might need to grieve. And it can be anything, however seemingly big or small. Perhaps it might be a person or a thing in your life that is changing right now. It could be that your child has just gone into a new school year. It could be that you're changing jobs. Whatever it is, you might have gained something but losing something else, and you need to process that. So let's remember that change is a form of loss, and loss needs to be grieved. So may you be grateful for how it was, but may you grieve whatever it is that you need to grieve so that you can be present, because being present is where the life is. I'm going to pray. Loving God, I thank you that we have this opportunity to be gathered together this morning. As Jamie shared earlier, we thank you for the life of Queen Elizabeth. And as we mourn the loss of her, we also bring to mind other things that we might not yet have processed, other things that we need to grieve. Lord, may you come alongside us as we process what is lost. Lord, may you comfort us, support us, enable us to feel and tangibly sense your peace. Lord, may we experience your presence now. Amen.